Come down in the morning, baby. No time for running out on me like that. You drive me crazy.
Tuning in to Songwriters from Here and Away, the show that features songwriters from Atlantic Canada, across Canada, and around the world. Hello, and thanks for tuning in to Songwriters from Here and Away. Glad you are here. This week we have an interview with Mr. Lenny Glant. I had the opportunity a while back to connect up on Zoom, and we talked while he was in his house in PEI. So I'll just jump right in and let Lenny do the talking, and I'll try not to talk too much, have a few songs. This will be a podcast as well, so look us up online. Here it is, Lenny Glant. Welcome to the Songwriters from Here and Away, Lenny. Thanks for popping in. I appreciate your time. What I missed doing was getting to your concert last week at the Carlton. A few friends went and said it was excellent. I saw some quick video of it. Have you got many shows left in this run?
One more in Prince Edward Island, and then we head out west, out to British Columbia. We do about six out there, and then back east. We're all over the East Coast for the rest of the summer.
Right.
Ontario after that, and then up to Alberta after that.
Right, yeah, nonstop. Good for you.
Yeah.
I was listening to some of your catalog, one of your first albums.
Probably Breakwater, I think.
Yeah, that was it, yeah. Well, it's great. You can hear the difference in production in the ensuing time frame, right? What triggers you to write a given tune?
Oh God, it could be anything, you know. Sometimes you're inspired by something that happens in your own life to yourself, your relatives, or your friends. But sometimes it might be a snippet of a conversation, you know. I've been inspired by movies. I've been inspired by novels. Mostly it's things that would probably move me from my own life or people around me.
Right.
It can really vary. You know, I've written a couple of my more popular songs because I heard an interview on the radio or television that
right.
something moved me. You know, Man of Steel, the song I wrote was written right after I heard one of the steel workers being interviewed, and he gave his story, and I just sat down and the song kind of spilled out, you know.
Yeah.
So it really varies, you know.
He got the news this morning. It came without a warning. They're gonna shut the whole thing down. 700 men out of work. Another paper promise gone down. Oh, he's only 45, but he's still alive. 'Cause he's never fought a fight he hasn't won. A man of steel says don't ever break until the job is done. Mary Ann was 20 years years of worry on her face like she never was young. She watched her husband work the hot steel, then she watched her son. And the streets of this town are cracked and blistered from all the weight they've had to bear. It ain't a town for weak hearts. The Man of Steel live there. Oh, the fires are fading in the plant tonight, but they're burning in his body and his mind. He said, they want to melt my heart down, but it's not yet time. It's a game he played when he was nine. Paper and stone and scissors of steel. Paper winning every time.
French and English. I know you have a duo with your partner and you guys go out and play that. When you write a song in French or English, can you translate in your head? How does that work? What's the difference? How does your voice change? How does your emotional approach change between French and English? Because I've never written in French, but I love some of the stuff I hear.
I didn't grow up speaking French, so English is my first language. Even though I am Acadian and I grew up in an Acadian community where unfortunately my grandparents spoke it when they were young, but the language was lost because we were surrounded by an English community. So
right.
I didn't speak French till I was in my 20s. And yet I was always trying to learn the language partially through music, through learning French songs and so forth. And it was kind of accidental why I made the first French record. I was at the Juno Awards because of an English album, and I met up with Donald K. Donald, Donald Tarleton, mm-hmm. And he was under the impression, I think, that I spoke French very well and I was Acadian. And he said, we should make a French record. And I said, yeah. and then I realized, oh, my God, what have I got myself into? And I ended up making my first French album under the name Lenny Gallant at that point.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've ever worked so hard on an album. I rewrote every song 6-7 times with people who actually did speak French well. And but it really helped me gain the language, some of the language back. And and even though most of my albums are English albums, of course, when Patricia Richard and I hooked up, French is her first language, and we almost accidentally formed a duo. We wrote one song together called Sirene Matelot, the very first song we wrote together, which means the siren and the sailor.
Oh, yeah.
And we just kept on writing, and suddenly we had enough songs for an album in French, and so we put that out. It did quite well, and we recorded the second album in French, and so which is doing extremely well on Francophone radio. We had a song, and I think it was number one for, I don't know, I think it was like 13 or 16 weeks or something like that.
Wow.
It's done quite well, and we have a lot of fun with it, but primarily I work in English as under the name Lenny Gallant.
Right. And, yeah, I'm sure you need to keep your focus, right?
Déjà la première neige, la terre s'habille en blanc. La chaleur chante une complainte, des terres et des champs dormants. C'est la mort de notre saison, novembre est dans le vent. L'hiver s'annonce longue, il faudra trouver de l'argent.
I see you do some co-writing.
I saw that you did what on the recent album. You have one with Dave Gunn. It said on Spotify, G-U-N-N. It might be Gunning.
No, everybody says that, but it's not Gunning. I have co-written with Dave Gunning, in the past, but I gave Dave Gunn a co-write because he gave me the title.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah. And getting back to what you said earlier, where does inspiration for a song come from? And in the case of the one I wrote and gave Dave Gunn a co-write, it was because he's a very good friend, and he works with Heavy Horses.
Okay.
He works with Clydesdale type horses in the woods all the time, and it's amazing, you know, that the work that he does, and he loves his horses. And we talk a lot. He called me up on the phone. He said one of his horses had passed, and he and an older friend had to bury the horse. And his friend said to him, and they had to kill a bottle while they were doing it to deal with the, didn't know it at all. Yeah. And he said after they were done, his buddy looks at him. He said, "Dave, it takes a lot of liquor to bury a horse." And Dave told me that story, and I said, "Dave, that is a line that is crying out for a song."
Yeah, so, that really is, isn't it? Yeah.
And so I had to write a song behind it. So it's not exactly a real co-write, but he gave me the title, so I put him down as a co-writer.
It takes a lot of liquor to bury a horse. That's what the old man said. And the better the horse, the deeper the hole, the more tears that you shed. Sometimes it's hard. The more you know, to drop the reins and just let go. It takes a lot of liquor to bury a horse. This world spins a little bit faster every day. And the things you loved all your life start to slip away. Like the place you met, the vows you made, the park where you song you danced to now is yesterday. It takes a lot of liquor to bury a horse. That's what the old man said. And the better a horse, the deeper the hole, the more tears that you shed. Sometimes it's hard, the more you know, to drop the reins and just let go. It takes a lot of liquor to bury a horse. Raise a glass, then smash it down.
Raise a glass, then smash it down.
Just like we did in that Greek town. Come dance the night away and greet the newborn light of day and make every minute count that can be found. Ah, it takes a lot. Down. We'll not let you lie or your focus fool around. A nod, a wink, a click of the tongue, and he will know what must be done. And then it seems your whole life falls in line. Ah, it takes a lot of liquor to bury a horse. That's what the old man said. And the better the horse, the deeper the hole, the more tears that you shed. Sometimes it's hard, the more you know, to drop the reins and just let go. It takes a lot of liquor to bury a horse.
Come on, Dave.
It takes a lot of liquor to bury a horse. That's what the old man said.
carry a horse. Yes, it does.
With a title as strong as that one, you know, it has to, I can see why you do. If someone's in the room with you, it's generally a shared duty of, or shared position of being co-writers. Most people, if they're in a room, even if they don't say much, they're still contributing something to the song that may not have happened without them. So, and
yeah, it kind of depends on the circumstances, but in general, that's, you know, if you've got it in, if your intention was to write a song and you're in the room, that's usually what happens. I did a lot of, most of my songs I write alone, but I used to go to Nashville 3-4 times a year to write, and that's pretty much the formula down there. You know, if you're in a room, it's a co-write.
Yeah, yeah. I was fascinated to see how you struck up the friendship with Buffett and how that progressed for you. And of course, it's sad that he's gone, but you must have a lot of great memories from that experience, eh?
I was very honored to be invited into his world a little bit.
And, yeah.
Yeah, he called me up. Well, he had recorded one of my songs about 20 years ago, Mademoiselle Voulez-vous danser?
Mademoiselle Voulez-vous danser? Take my hand and turn red.
And but then he a couple of years ago he called me up almost 2 years ago now and said he wanted to write some songs with me. I was floored, you know, it's great. Yeah. And because he had covered me before, but we'd never written together before. We ended up writing two songs together. He wanted to write a song called Portugal or PEI. Which is where I'm from, PEI, okay. And which was amazing because, you know, he has East Coast roots. A lot of people don't know that. His great-grandparents came from Rose Blanche, Newfoundland, and his grandparents lived in Sydney, Cape Breton, when his granddad was really young, and I guess he tells the story about his granddad jumping out a window, running off to sea, and never came back. And if you listen to Jimmy Buffett's song "A Son of a Son of a Sailor," that's who he's talking about. So he came back, and he had visited Newfoundland, and he had visited Nova Scotia, and I was with him when he visited parts of Nova Scotia. We hung out, but he'd never been to PEI, and he really wanted to come to PEI and wanted to write this song. And we co-wrote it with Will Kimbrough and Mac McAnally and myself and Jimmy. And but he had never been here, so I knew he wasn't well, even though he never spoke about it. He was very positive, never talked about his cancer at all.
Chin up kind
of
guy.
But we must have planned his trip to PEI at least 6 or 7 times. And then even 8 days before he passed, he texted and said, well, I'm undergoing a procedure, but I'm hoping it goes well. And what are you doing in October if things go well? And I said, I'm here, man. You can make it.
Yeah.
My partner, Patricia, and I, we decided to go around to all the places named in the song, Portugal or PEI, because there's a lot of PEI place names.
Right.
And we went around all the places and tried to take his spirit with us on a little virtual tour of PEI. And you can see it on YouTube. It's on YouTube, Jimmy's trip to PEI, the trip he never made.
I'll hopscotch across the ocean.
You're listening to an interview with Lenny Gallant on Songwriters from Here and Away. We will have a slightly longer version of this radio show up on the podcast. Check it out. Go to SFHAA, Songwriters from Here and Away, .ca. Hang on, we'll be right back.
Step into a world where stories meet sound. My name is Simmer Kaur, host of Melodies of Myth, a show that blends Indian classical and Western music with short tales of culture, history, and identity. Join me every Friday at 3 p.m. only on CFRC. And if you enjoy the music, you can find more by searching Simar Kaur on Spotify. Tune in, unwind, and let the melodies carry you. Once again, it's Melodies of Myth, 3 p.m. every Fridays.
Are you looking for smoking hot local singles in your area? Well, look no further. Tune in Thursdays at 11:30 for the Release Radar Rundown with great singles released by local Kingston artists, a program made possible in partnership with the Kingston Music Office and our friends at Modern City Taxi. We've got something for everyone with great music across genres made by musicians in our community. Join in the fun. Release Radar Rundown, Thursdays, 11:30 a.m. right here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Hello and welcome to Salt Licht and Rapture. I'm your host, Nishan Tung. Salt Licht and Rapture is a sonic exploration of, to quote Virginia Woolf, violent waves of emotion. Featuring both known and lesser known musicians and poets, a special emphasis is placed on oddball, enigmatic, outsider artists whose work invokes dreamscapes and feelings of alienation, nostalgia, melancholy, existential unease, and yearning. Join me on Fridays at 8 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM.
You can't handle me. Hold up. Ain't you Nathaniel B?
What is it?
Get the...
Tune in at Wednesdays at 2 p.m. from the program. I, your host Nate, will go over a variety of different genres and themes. I sometimes call my friends and do dumb stuff, and if you guys like dumb stuff, you're gonna love my show. So yeah, Wednesdays, 2, be there.
On September 28th at 7 p.m., check out Raising Our Voices, Taking on Bill 5 with special guests Ramon Catacquapit and local musicians Kakao and Sarah Harmer at The Spire. All are welcome to also attend the Free Indigenous Perspectives on Bill 5 event at the Isabel Bader Center for the Performing Arts on Monday, September 29th at 6:30 p.m. as well. Learn more about Taking on Bill 5 initiatives at naturesdefense.ca.
Broadcasting 24/7, 365, you're listening to 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca, Kingston's only campus community radio station. Tune in for the best local programming.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. My name is Cindy. This is Absolutely Frivolous. Yes, it's Monday morning. Welcome, everybody who's listening. I'm so glad you're here. I'm so glad to be here, as always. Bright, shiny, lovely, sunny day out there. And but I'm here in the station. Always the best place to be on a Monday morning, of course. And the best place to listen to. You should be listening to CFRC 101.9 FM all the time. And you can do that by, I don't know, going to our website, cfrc.ca, going on the radio, go and tuning into 101.9 FM. And yeah, that's, and I mean, you can always stream. You can always, there's so many different apps out there. All that information about where you can find us on different apps is, of course, on cfrc.ca. Welcome, welcome, welcome. If you've never tuned in before, this is a comedy show. I'm not funny, but I do try to play funny stuff on the air. I always like to say at the beginning of every show, if I have missed bleeping a swear word, or there's a topic that you find perhaps is a little too off color for 10:30 on a Monday morning, please feel free to change the channel. We are not here to offend anyone, so I'm apologizing in advance if we do. From myself, from the team of Absolutely Frivolous, from the team of CFRC 101.9 FM. It's a great little station. We're over 100 years old. I'm sure we've made mistakes in our time. And I know I have in terms of producing shows and doing other things. But honestly, we still keep kicking. We still keep going. And we appreciate your understanding. And we're a wonderful little community radio station. We're located on Queens campus, right beside the bookstore. Very exciting to always be here and have that continuity of history going on. It warms my soul. But I have only one comedian for you today. We have Katie Boyle. She's very, very funny. I don't even know. She's going to talk about therapy. And she's just hilarious. The CFRC, of course, is involved in the community. Like I said, one thing I did want to point out, of course, is how great we are in terms of celebrating other community organizations here in the Kingston and surrounding areas. The Tet Center will be 10 years at its location, opening its doors in 2015. Its location down by the water off of King Street there. It's been around that long already. I can't believe it. It's such a wonderful organization. It's where artists, creatives, and community members come together to connect, learn, and create. Now, a decade later, Tet Center invites all community members to join a one-night-only celebration that will transform the building into a vibrant, interactive showcase of artistic exploration. It's entitled Tet at 10 Reflections. This anniversary celebration invites guests to journey through a decade of artistic growth while exploring the theme of reflections in multiple dimensions, from cherished memories and dazzling displays to the rippling impact Tet Center's creative community has made on Kingston's artistic fabric. Yay! So, like I said, it's coming up. It's on Saturday, October 4th. The time is 7 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. And it's located at 370 King Street West, Kingston, Ontario. It's open to the public, 19 plus, it says. And you can get your tickets here. It's a fundraiser to support future arts programming, accessibility, and community initiatives at the Tet. So there will be silent auction with all funds helping to sustain the Tet as Kingston's creative hub for years to come. So just to give you an idea, it is going to be wonderful in terms of the silent auction and other things going on and live performances, live music. It looks like there's different levels of payment. So there is the Ripple ticket, which is $50 ticket, pay what you can. And then, of course, $61.68 with the fee and tax. But you can also pay a little more, the Illuminate. It helps light the night. And this level contributes to artist fees, live performance costs, and creative programming. There will be catering. It's going to be great. And you can make just a donation. If you can't even attend, please make a donation. It looks like it's going to be a fun night, and it's too bad if you can't attend, but you're more than welcome to donate some cash and support the Tet Center, which is a wonderful, wonderful creative place for everyone here in the Kingston and surrounding areas, honestly. Okay, but you're here for comedy. So let's play a little bit of Katie Boyle. She's going to talk about therapy. Here she is on Absolutely Frivolous on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Okay, stop. thank you guys so much for being here. I really appreciate it. Obviously, you guys know it's Tafin, so you guys are the best. Really quickly, before I even start, I do just want to find out who's not from the United States. Clap it up. Hi, people. Okay, where are you from? Cork! Do you guys know? Clap if you know about Cork. Okay. they love Cork. They're obsessed with Cork. Anytime you meet a Cork person, you'll know they're from Cork because they will tell you before they tell you their name, okay? They love Cork. And you're from Cork as well?
No, I'm from Dublin.
You're from Dublin?
Friends anyway.
Oh my God. You guys don't understand. This is like Staten Island, Manhattan, okay? They have overcome so much to have this friendship. But you guys are sitting in the front row. Irish people in the front row. That's madness. Have you been here a long time? You must have been. Yeah.
8 years.
8 years, yeah. That's the mark where you get the American confidence to sit in the front row. You can use your voice and talk. It's amazing. Clap it up for these guys. This is growth. And you guys look great as well. I am from Ireland. Surprise. No, I actually will be living in your country for 10 years this month. Yeah, I know. Nearly a New Yorker. I do. I love living here. I actually had a choice between Germany or here. And I was like, obviously, I should go to the United States because they speak English and I speak English. But I found out very quickly I don't. Because every time I would speak to an American, after a few seconds, they'd be like, oh, my God, your English is so good. And I'd have to be like, oh, thank you so much. It is my only language. I always thought that was like a you thing for the people from the United States. I thought it was like a you issue that you didn't know that Ireland speaks English predominantly as a first language. But it is a big country, so I was like, that's fine, but it's still a you thing, okay? Until recently, I was getting my coffee at my local coffee shop, and the barista also has a non-United States accent, so I always wanted to ask her where she's from, but that's something that you guys do. So I was trying to be tactful with it. And then eventually, she told me that she was going home to Spain for a holiday, and I was like, oh my God, you're from Spain? I'm from Ireland. We're neighbours. And then she was like, well, how long have you lived here? And I said, 10 years. And she goes, that's why your English is so good. I was like, thank you so much. I've been working on it for 34 years. So I think it's a me thing, to be honest. Words are hard. We do have an Irish language, though. I don't want to mislead you. We do have one. It's kind of hard to explain because the majority of the country do speak English as a first language, and it's a bit of history, but it's because when the Brits came, they outlawed it and the food. That was literally just for the Irish in the room. It is one of those things, though. You know the way Gen Z is making every country feel bad about something? In your country, it's climate change. You should stop. In our country, it's that we don't speak our native language. So I've been trying to relearn it. For the Irish in the room, clap if you can speak it fluently. It's really hard, though. It was taught really badly to us, okay? It's really hard. But I've been trying to relearn it. And I didn't realize how important it is to know your native language because all of a sudden I was like, wow, we are so dramatic as a people. Because if you want to say I'm hungry in Irish, it's to ukrasurm, but then that translates back into English as the hunger is on me. That is the most famine head way to say that. Two famine references. That's the thing about Irish people. We will always bring up the famine. Okay? It's our 9/11. I wrote on my notes not to do that joke. I was like, don't do it. Don't do it. But I did it. We have different slang too, because a lot of our slang would have been based off Irish, so I didn't realise that you guys didn't know our slang, because we know all of your slang, because we grew up watching your TV shows, okay? But I didn't realise people don't watch Irish shows over here. I know you're watching Derry Girls now, so you're... I mean, yeah, but a lot of you are 20 years behind, okay? Some people actually think that is in real time, and they'll come up to me and be like, oh my God, are the Brits trying to kill you? I'm like, yes. That is why I came to your country. Freedom. No, it's the slang is something I've had to explain so many times, you know. I've never had to... If you are sick back home, you'll say I'm in bits, okay? And I was saying that to my American friends, like, oh, I can't go out, I'm in bits. And they were like, what? And I was like, got really defensive. I was like, obviously it means I'm sick because I'm in bits. I'm in little pieces. I'm not whole. Then I was like, oh my God, have I been a poet my whole life? So embarrassing. Then there's one that we use everywhere in the country, which is very versatile, and you'll hear it a million times if you ever go to Ireland. It's grand, okay? So how are you? Grand. How's the meal? Grand. How's the weather? Grand. It means fine. I had no idea that Americans were hearing that and interpreting that as grand, grandiose, amazing. So every time I was answering with grand to Americans, and I would say it multiple times, they'd be like, wow, you're so positive. I was like, I'm suicidal. I love doing that line because the people who have been suicidal cackle the loudest. We survived it. I found out the miscommunication with Gran because I had an American friend over here, a man. And I slept with him because it's really important for me to ruin a friendship. But because he was a friend, I was just like, how is that for you? I don't actually want to know the answer, if I'm honest. But he was being polite back and trying to use my slang, and he was like, it was grand. I was like, fuck you. I did all my best moves as well. I was very quiet and very still. Okay. I'm so glad you guys enjoyed that, because I did that recently at an American event and it was all Gen Z advertisers. And when I said that line, they go, "Oh!" I was like, it's fine. I've learned from you. I enjoy sex now. I make noises. I'm like, "Oh!" It was really hard for me to date an American because you guys have feelings. It's so weird to explain this because my friend told me I was a hypocrite for saying that on stage because he was like, you're the most emotional person I've ever met. And I was like, yeah, but that's not what I said. Okay? Because you guys grew up with like having feelings and being able to identify them and articulate them, okay? I would wake up feeling I'm depressed for the whole day, okay? I'll call my dad. He acts like I've just called tech support, by the way. Because he's like, have you turned it on and off again? And what type of answer is that? But then he'll be like, did you have water today? And I'm like, oh, never mind. Mixed up my depression with dehydration again. Oh, my God. So when I broke up with him, I was fine. That was the feeling I felt. It was just like, next chapter, move on. I'm grand. But the way my American friends were showing up for me, the level of support they were giving me, it made me feel bad that I didn't feel bad, okay? One of the girls showed up to my house with soup. That's a fucking sad food. So I was like, what is wrong with me? Do I not have like real emotions? And I kept thinking about it. So then I walked out of the street one day and I kept thinking about it. And then my eyes started to water and I was like, oh, sadness. And then I sneezed. I was like, never mind, just that emotion of pollen. It's hard though. I just find there's two parts to it. There's being a woman and there's being Irish. The woman part every woman in the room can relate to. I don't know if straight men know this. When we break up with you, we've already done that 6 months previously in our head. Okay? We have the bags mentally packed. All of the WhatsApp groups have known for months, okay? You walk in for dinner one day, you're like, what are we going to have tonight? And we're like, this fucker has no idea what's about to happen to him. Then the second part is being Irish, because for our generation, I'm presuming we're all from the same generation, the Irish in the room, every other generation had it worse than us. So we could never complain about anything. If we said, oh, my knee is sore, your parents would be like, the recession, okay? Your grandparents would be talking about the famine, even though they didn't exist during the famine, okay? You could never complain. So it's just a people who shove everything down, process all those emotions when they're 80 and immediately pass away. It's a medical condition at home. It's called dying of feelings. And then I find it hard to date American men as an Irish woman. I think Irish women are very, very different. We're brought up in a culture that is roasting. We call it slagging, which is flirting. But that makes American men cry. It's a little bit awkward. And then we can't date Irish men over here. You know why? Yeah, because American women, stop dating. This should be a PSA. Stop dating our men, okay? Because they come over here, and some of them are fine, some of them are good looking, some of them are not, but you're just so enamored by the accent, okay? So they come over here and you're like, oh my God, you're gorgeous. They've never gotten a compliment in their life. They can't come back to us where we're like, you're gonna wear that outside in public. And they're perfect for us because they know us culturally, okay? Because we can be quite, you know, hyper-independent, a bit defensive. I'll give an example. When the bill comes to the table, or the cheque, as you guys call it, we will physically fight the Irish man for the bill, okay? He knows he's still paying for that bill at the end, okay? But the American man, I was like, oh, would you like me to pay? And he was like, okay. And I was like, who the fuck raised you? Give me your phone number right now. I found the cute little names that you have for women over here, too weird as well. My ex wanted to be able to call me baby. Clap in the room if you like being called baby. Childhood trauma? Or are you just like attention? A bit of both. Okay, baby. Sorry, I feel like I just like was very that. I feel like I should be get reported to HR for that. No, it's such an ick for me. I hate it. My ex kept trying to call me baby, and I was like, no, you can't. And he was like, what will I call you? And I was like, my name. What a foreign concept. He wouldn't let it go, though. He needed something cute and different to call me. So he Googled what my name is in Irish. Remember the language I told you I do not speak? And he kept calling me Cochin. Okay, he might as well have been calling me fucking Pamela. And then every time he'd be like, Cochin, Cochin. My friend was like, why is he impersonating a slot machine? If I ever was a stripper, I wouldn't be though, because I can't wear heels. But if I ever was, it'd be such a good stripper name. Every time you put the dollar in, I'm just like, Cochin. Yeah, I don't like the... My ex wouldn't drop it as well, this nickname thing. It was the only thing we really had like a serious argument about our whole relationship. He brought it up when he started to show me engagement rings. Also, when he was showing me engagement rings, how do I explain this? At some point in my relationship, my ex decided he was not going to work anymore, okay? Yeah. I know. But see, this is the thing. Like, look, every country is xenophobic. It's just, you know, the States, you're a bit more loud about it, okay? But what the story that's not being told over here is that what happens is us immigrants end up coming over and supporting one of your fuckers. That's not the immigrant dream I signed up for. When he showed me the engagement rings, I was like, oh no, if we get married, I'm going to have to pay for the wedding. That's a level of feminism I'm not okay with. But then he goes, don't worry, I'm not going to propose until you let me call you baby. I know. I was like, excuse you. I paid for the rent this month. You can call me madame.
Thanks.
My ex is nice, though. He's actually really, really lovely. We just have different work ethics and what we want for the future. And I am a little bit older, so all those things they factor in. But I have to say he's nice because I feel quite guilty talking about him. But when I broke up with him, he was very reasonable with it. He was like, you're right, I need to work on all these things. And we had a big conversation about it. And I called my dad and I was like, isn't this amazing that he's been so like reasonable? And it was an easy breakup. And my dad was like, he's even too lazy to argue. My dad didn't want me to marry him, just because my dad is like, he's an Irish man and he's had like four jobs his whole life. Back home, your identity is kind of based on how much you work, which can be, it's not that it's right, but my dad is not going to accept anybody who hasn't got at least one, you know? So he kept trying to ask my dad for permission to marry me, and my dad knew that he was trying to do that. And I've never heard my dad say so many times, I'm going to feed the cows. We don't even have cows. I don't know what fucking field he was wandering into to overfeed the neighbor's cows. But I'm glad I was with my ex because it taught me a lot about like a healthy relationship. Before I was always actively dating crazy guys. I loved crazy guys. It's just, I don't know how to explain it. It's some sort of like mental. But like nice guys would hit on me in my 20s all the time, and they'd be lovely and they'd be good looking and they'd have good jobs and they'd come up and I'd be like, no, thank you. And there'd be some guy twitching in the corner, I'd be like, that's my man. So with my ex just being nice, it was so nice to be just taken off the streets, you know? But while I was with him, I decided I should go to therapy, which is very taboo for Irish. Clap if you've gone to therapy yet. Oh yeah, brilliant. Oh, you haven't? Oh, she just confessed to her friend. I haven't told you this, but I'm so sorry, I've been going to therapy. It's really taboo in our country, to be honest. I think we're coming more to terms with it. Best thing I ever did, like, you could just go and talk about your problems. Before, I used to just drink. It's amazing. No, what was so helpful about it is all my exes, they were crazy, they were toxic, they all cheated. But I loved that. Don't get me wrong, I loved a good story to tell my friends, okay? I always had something to complain about. I always had the best stories, and your friends love it too, okay? They don't like, they want you to date a nice guy, but they don't want to hear the stories. Oh, he's just nice and treat me right. That's boring, okay? They want to hear he tried to hit me, but he missed. I can do that, he missed. But anyway, so with my therapist, she was like, don't project any of that stuff into this relationship, you know? And just because other guys cheated, it doesn't mean your current boyfriend would cheat. She made me so chill. that I wouldn't even have cared if my ex had cheated. Firstly, he's extremely socially introverted and he plays video games all day. If he had cheated, I would have been like, oh my God, you made a friend. She got you off the couch. She was this amazing woman. My therapist was weird. She's really nice and amazing and she was so helpful with relationship stuff. The thing is, she was only $15 an hour. So, not all the advice was great, okay? Which is fine. You know, if I'm only paying $15 an hour, you just pick and choose, okay? I told her I have really bad anxiety and it comes out, this is so not relatable for anybody, but it comes out through weeing. Does anybody get wee anxiety? No. See, I'm insane, okay? Well, okay, so I have like 5 cups of coffee and 10 cups of tea a day, and then on top of all your water, okay? So when I go to bed at night, I'm like, oh my God, you should go for a wee. You've been drinking all day. But then I'll come back to the bed and I go, you should go for another one, you know, you have full bladder. I'll go back and forth, then I nearly give myself a fucking UTI, okay? And so I said this to my therapist. I was like, obviously I have anxiety and it's manifesting this way. Can we work on it? And she goes, sure, sure, you should wear a diaper. It's like, I didn't say I'm wetting the bed. She got so defensive as well. She was like, I don't know why you come to me if you don't want a solution. I was like, but for months we worked on my ability to say no. I'm just doing the thing that you taught me. I mean, it makes sense. She's only $15 an hour. She probably has like an Etsy diaper business on the side. The poor woman. God, I hope she never watches this because she is lovely. Every story I do about someone is just Catholic guilt afterwards. Like, oh God, no, they're very nice. When my family found out I was going to therapy, they're so, like, when specifically my grandparents, because that is just like they just could not get their head around it. My grandfather was going around telling people in our town that I was doing the thing Tom Cruise is doing. I was like, I am not a Scientologist. People were coming up to me when I'm home, be like, do you think you're a lizard now, do you? I was like, no, I don't think I'm a lizard. God, I had to undo all this stuff. But then my grandfather kept at me with it. He was like, you don't need to pay for therapy, like $15 an hour. But anyway, he's like, you don't need to pay for it. You can just will away your issues. He goes, I had a fear of flying. And one day I went, pew, gone. Which obviously everybody knows that's not true. That's not real. He doesn't know the truth. The truth is my grandmother wanted to go on trips to Spain when this became a thing. But he refused to because of his fear of flying. She's a nurse at home, so she would take Valium from work. She would bring it home. She would crush it up and put it in his food. So for 30 years, this man thinks he willed away his fear of flying. He was just flying high. My grandfather is so Irish. There's a lot of there's been a lot of like really bad stereotypes about Irish people, and I don't think any of the previous generations have really said anything about it except for Gen Z. They're like, stop it. And I get it, you know, there's like, you call us violent alcoholics. I've never been violent with anybody and I'm not an alcoholic anymore. I wouldn't have identified as one until I came to this country, because I'd be talking to Americans, they'd be like, yeah, I'm in AA, and I'm like, oh my God, did you burn down the house? And they're like, no. And I'm like, did you kill the kids? And they're like, no. And I'm like, why are you in AA? And they're like, well, I used to drink Friday and Saturday and Sunday. And I was like, oh my God, I'm an alcoholic. No idea. And I agree with a lot of the stereotypes, you know, that's not what Irish people are. But the only issue I have is when you meet my grandfather, he looks like propaganda the Brits would use against us. He's worn a Peaky Blinders hat every day of his life. I have never seen the top of his head. I don't know if he has hair. He's a farmer. Well, he's a Catholic as well, and he's a farmer. He grows his own potatoes because he's like, we'll never let it happen again. His favourite drink is Guinness. He's obsessed with Guinness. He actually has his own seat at the local bar with his own arse print, and he goes there every day and he has his Guinness. And when I was 15, my first ever job was in that bar, and the owner was like, you're going to pour your first pint of Guinness and you're going to give it to your grandfather. And he was like, it's going to be a beautiful moment. And then my grandfather sent it back. I said this on stage 2 weeks ago in Dublin, and my sister watched the show, and afterwards she was like, Did that really happen to you? I was like, yeah. And so she's 15 years younger than me. He had done the exact same thing to her. That is the longest bit to keep going. He doesn't like Gen Z. Of course, that's fair. He doesn't relate to them. My sister is Gen Z. And when I was home, she was telling me in front of him that she was being gaslit at school. And my grandfather got such a fright, he thought someone had tried to set her afire. Then she explained what gaslighting is, and he looked like he would have preferred if someone had tried to set her afire. He's very nationalist too when it comes to Irish culture, because a lot of that stuff was outlawed by the Brits. So we have our, oh my God, it's so hard to explain. So we have our own football. Okay, it's called Gaelic football. All you need to know is 32 counties have their own team, okay? And my grandfather is he's from a place called Longford, which you also wouldn't know. Oh my God, you clapped. Are you from Longford?
My mom's from Longford.
Oh, you're not going to like the next thing I'm about to say. I don't know if you would have clapped with all the Irish in the room if you really knew about Longford. Oh, the joy. Oh, ignorance is bliss. I feel so bad that I'm about to educate you. I love going back to visit Longford when I'm here because it's so noisy and it's green. Okay, let's say the good things about it. It's beautiful, but it is the Alabama of Ireland. Okay, they've got guns. They voted against same-sex marriage. There was a whole Facebook thing once where they were trying to vote them off being a county. Okay, yeah, you really did not know what you were wooing. No, it really is like Alabama. One of the girls I knew growing up, she ended up marrying her cousin. People get really uncomfortable with that, and I don't know why, because I'm like, they had 8 kids and 7 were fine. That's just good maths. We could all hope for that, you know? And they're really hot, so good for them. But he gives me this jersey. And I did spend like a good chunk of my life there, so he doesn't identify me as from Kildare. He was like, you're from Longford, here's a jersey. The thing about the jersey, it's the colours of the Ukrainian flag. Okay, and I'm an idiot. When all the Ukrainian flags popped up in New York, I was walking around like, I had no idea there were so many people from Longford here this whole time. Wow, could have had a community.
This is Glenn Close on CFRC 101.9 FM on Queen's University campus in Kingston.
That sound? That's the sound of a healthy, well-cared-for cat. I truly hope you've been lucky enough to hear that sound before. The feral cat population around Kingston and the surrounding areas has grown considerably over the last few years. And thanks to organizations like Kendra's Community Kitties, these feral cats are being fed, medically cared for, spayed, neutered, flea treated, dewormed, given winter shelters, and placed in loving homes whenever possible.
Hundreds of these special animals have been rescued by Kendra, and many of these wonderful felines are purring right now, safe and healthy.
Wow. But rescuing and rehoming feral cats isn't easy. It requires an enormous amount of time and effort, and there are a few ways you can help.
You can donate to Kendra's Community Kitties on their website, kckitties.com. Even a small